You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. What do you do when you have small children and, you know, it can become challenging 24-7? Do you pull the hairs out of your head? No, you write a book, and that's what my guest did this week. He's Andrew Bomback, professor of medicine at the Columbia University and the author of the new book, Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. And for the next year, half hour, we'll be talking with Andrew Bomback about his motivations and reasons for writing the book. And he is the father of three small children, so he's certainly speaking and writing from personal experience, something that perhaps we can all share. It's always good to find other people that share the similar frustrations and the challenges today, especially of raising young children. Andrew, nice to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Al. This is really exciting to talk to you today.
Well, you know, parenting, my daughter is no longer little, but this challenges are still there. I like to say that, you know, at six, it's one level of challenges. And when they get to be 18, it's a whole different challenge. But obviously, you found this early on that, you know, one, you wanted to be the best parent you can possibly can. And I think for the most part, Andrew, most people feel that way. But then they question themselves sometimes. So did it kind of happen that way for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I the previous book I wrote was about doctoring, and then now I'm writing a book about parenting. And I had sort of two similar mid-career crises, you know, if you take parenting as a career into itself. With my doctoring around the middle of my career as a doctor, I sort of started questioning, how am I doing this? Am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? What can I do better? And I ended up writing a book about that, and it really helped me learn more about the profession of medicine. And it helped me as a doctor. And sort of at the same point when I had already two small kids and the third small one was on the way, and I was just having so much struggle just processing what I was doing on a regular basis and whether or not it was working and whether or not I was getting good results, I said, I'm going to dive into the parenting literature the way I did with the doctoring literature and just sort of see if I can better understand it by looking at it analytically. And for me, it's so often I learn more about my own thoughts and my own feelings by writing. And so I wrote this book really as a way to try to figure out what am I doing well, what am I not doing well. And then that sort of blossomed into just looking at parenting in general. And I realized that those questions I was asking myself are pretty much questions that every parent now is asking themselves. And I think they've become very specific 21st century questions in terms of how parenting has evolved. So I started doing this book more as sort of like a cry for help on my own terms. And I think I got some help by looking into this subject matter. And I would hope that some parents will read this book and get the same sort of help that I was looking for.
Yeah, I like that call for help, because that's exactly how you know, I felt at times and still do at times. You question yourself, you question the motivations, and then you want to put the blame on perhaps the child, but then you have to realize that, you know, they don't know any better, especially when they're very young. So really, you know, you really do a number on yourself. But more importantly, after reading your book, I come to the conclusion that, you know, you had some doubts about your own ability. But let me ask you, is that part and parcel of what's happening in society today? This is a lot different today. Parenting today in the year 2022 is much different than it was in the 1950s or even in the early 1960s. I think you'd agree, and I want to get your sense on this, that there's much more pressure on parents, external pressure, not just from within the family itself, but even you know, social media and everything else that comes into play on how to be a good parent. And does that put undue influence and pressure on people?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you just said. I think the parents of today are dealing with a set of pressures and to some degree also a set of anxieties that have really never been experienced before by any generation of parents. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. And they don't just date back to 10, 15 years ago. They go back all the way to the turn of the 20th century. Right around the 1900s, there was an incredible improvement in child mortality rates. And parents basically had the luxury to stop worrying about the simple question of, is my infant going to survive? But rather now move to the more, you know, pressing and difficult question of, now that they're surviving, how do I make sure they're being raised appropriately? So that was the first big generational shift. And then the second generational shift was, people moved out of rural areas and into the cities. And when they move out of rural areas into the cities, they're generally moving away from a multi-generational model of raising children, where grandparents and older aunts and uncles are living with new parents. And it's basically six or seven or eight adults raising a kid. But now it's basically just the two parents raising the kid, and the older relatives are at a periphery. So you lose the advice from that older generation, and you also lose the labor from that older generation. And it's all thrown onto parents. And as we move to the end of the 20th century and into the 21st century, there's a whole new arena of helicopter parenting, and this idea that we have to be completely absorbed with our kids, and really use every waking hour towards cultivating the best version of our kids. And that probably stems from a change in the demographics of parents. Parents now are older when they have their first kid, and because they're older when they have their first kid, they tend to have smaller families. So you can even put more attention per child, because the family size now on average is smaller. So you take all those sort of like demographic pressures, and then you throw in now, as you mentioned, social media, where you have a bunch of judging eyes on your parenting. Mm. And to me, social media, you know, it has its, obviously, its great benefits. Like, I can go onto Facebook or Instagram, and somebody I haven't seen in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, I can see their family vacations and, oh, that's what they look like now. That's what their kids look like now.
Right.
But there is this pressure to put the perfect version of your family on social media. And when you do that, the person who's watching it has this added pressure upon themselves. Why is that family having such a great time? Why are they having the perfect vacation and I can't do it from my own family? So you get this sort of external pressure just from images that you're inundated with, of other families who seem to be doing it right. But if you sort of break down the barriers, and I get into this a little bit in the book, so much of what's put onto social media by parents is this performance of saying, look, we're doing it, but behind the curtain, there's a lot of pressure and anxiety to get that performance just right for that moment that you capture for social media. So I think it's a really unique time to be a parent, because in many ways, parents are more on their own. They're more stressed about the duty of parenting, and they have so many more stakeholders involved in parenting, even though they're not technically present in the household. So to me, it's a very difficult time now to be a parent. There's obviously a lot of resources that are available, but even that, the abundance of resources can be overwhelming. You know, you could say, well, parents today, there's millions of advice books they can use. There's all these parenting blogs they can check. There's all these parenting podcasts they can listen to. But sometimes that kind of choice can be very overwhelming and anxiety inducing as well.
Yeah, and I think you lose the one's innate ability to go with what your gut tells you. And at the end of the day, you're making the final call as to, you know, what will they wear, what will they eat, where will they go to school, who will they, you know, associate with. But going back to what you were talking about, and we brought it up at the outset, the social media, I realized that in my own neighborhood over the years, teenagers, both male and female, as they were going into their or completing their senior year of high school, the next big step is, where will I be going next? And all the colleges and this texting back and forth. I got into Brown University. Where are you going? And that person may say, well, my father and mother's means only allow me to go to a junior college. And then there was this sort of, well, I'm better than you. And, that puts pressure on the child, who then says to the parent, how come he can go there or she can go there and I can't? So you're absolutely right. It really puts a lot of undue pressure on a parent. And then they question their own, their own ability to do parenting. I want to take a quick pause, and then we'll be right back. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vohner, and this is The Public Eye. My guest this week is a physician and author, Andrew Bomback. His new book is Long Days, Short Years, and it's a book that Andrew wrote I think after doing some soul searching, raising young children, and wondering if and when he's doing the right thing, and it, like many parents, look in the mirror each and every day and probably say, God, help me. And Andrew, I think that's, I know many days I've done that and say, somebody, please help me. But you know, as you were talking about, at the end of the day, it's you really need to put your imprint on this. I mean, you want to leave, you want to instill in them, you know, good virtues, and you want to set some examples for them. As you talked about back in the past, I'm thinking, and you're right, aunts and uncles, maybe an older sibling, maybe grandparents were very much involved in the upbringing. But wouldn't that have been also very confusing for the child to have one person say, no, you can't go out right now, and the other one saying, why not? I would think today, at least from the parent's perspective, it's one voice or two voices, the mother and the father, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that I really is
I think we're losing you a little bit there.
Sorry, I was saying what I've learned, probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned from exploring the subject matter, is that parents today grossly underestimate what kids are capable of, and specifically don't value their independence and their flexibility as much as we should.
Mm.
And so I think kids are really savvy about getting multiple pieces of advice. I mean, yes, you could argue, oh, they're going to sort of pit person against that person against that person. But I also think they're very utilitarian and very pragmatic about how to sort of look at examples in their lives. Yeah, I'll give you the example of my own kids. My wife and I have tried to raise them bilingually because my wife is Latina, and child spoke Spanish pretty much all the time, but the second and the third child spoke English, and I listened to a linguistics professor who said, yeah, that's because the kids watch the older sibling, and they realize out in the society, the older sibling is using English all the time to get what she wants, and so they realize, well, yeah, we're being taught Spanish, but English is what's going to get us the most that we need when we're outside of the home. So it's things like that that kids are just really tuned in to how best to get input from multiple, can take input from multiple sources.
Yeah, we seem to be losing you again a little bit there, Andrew. I don't know if that's
the, oh, sorry.
Yeah,
they can take input from multiple sources and really deal well with that. One of the things I wanted to circle back to is you had mentioned, you know, about trusting your gut,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's sort of a really interesting phrase for parents because, you know, my parents and I think many of our own parents, if you take the current generations of parents, my parents and that prior generation of parents really relied heavily on Dr. Spock. And Dr. Spock's book, you know, sort of the mantra is trust yourself, go with your gut. You're actually better at this than you're giving yourself credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a really reassuring message to parents. But if you contrast the Dr. Spock book with some of the best-selling child-rearing books that are coming out now, most of the parenting books that come out now are giving almost the exact opposite message.
Hmm.
They're not saying trust yourself. They're actually saying don't go with your gut instinct. Stop and think really hard about what you're going to say to your child. And if needed, here's an actual script that you can use for your child that we have written for you to make sure you don't mess up the lines. So it's almost like the exact opposite message that today's parents are being given to go with your gut. Because you had mentioned it earlier, and I wanted to make sure we circle back to that, because I think that's a big difference in the way parenting now has become sort of this scripted performance role versus what it was encouraged to be 50, 60 years ago as sort of an instinctual calling.
Well, I can remember growing up in the '60s and having a friend say, "Well, you know, I got a new glove and I got a new ball," and I'd go home and ask my parents, "Can I have one?" And they'd say, "No." I said, "Well, why? Billy's got one," and they say, "I don't care what Billy has, and I don't care what Billy's parents did or didn't do. This is what it is, and you either accepted that or you didn't." And I'll be honest with you, I don't think it. Looking back on it now, I don't think it was necessarily wrong, but they were very confident and comfortable in their own skin, going, you know, going back to what you were just talking about, and feeling that this is the decision I'm making. This is our home. This is how we're rearing our children, and just go with it. Today, you're right. I think it's a completely different mantra, and that's got to be mind-boggling, especially as you were saying, and I couldn't agree with you more, that many parents, it's not 20 and 21. I mean, there are people who get married and have children very young, but many do hold off, and it's not unusual today, late 20s, early 30s, even into their 40s. And by then, you're set in your own ways, too. So I guess there's a lot more challenges to that. But so at the end of the day, let me ask you, Andrew, they still look up to us, at least up to some point anyway. And I agree with it. There's great intuition in many of these kids. Many of them, we don't give them enough credit for having a brain and being able to make their own decisions between what's right and wrong. Some go afoul, no question about it. But isn't it important? Isn't the most important thing that at the end of the day, that they feel comfortable, whether they agree with you or not, that you are someone who has their best interest at heart?
Well, yeah, I think that's a very sort of reasonable and appropriate goal for raising children. I think one of the issues is that for many parents, that alone doesn't seem to be sufficient. You know, if you say, what's your goal for your children? A lot of times, you know, the pat answer is, I want them to be responsible, mature, kind, compassionate adults. And that is absolutely the appropriate goal for raising a child. But if you go to the next level, and it sort of goes back to what you were saying about college admission anxiety and the sort of competitiveness, it's also, I want them to be super, super successful, super independent.
Right.
And the current generation of parents is the first generation of parents that on average makes less money than their parents. So today's parents on average are accumulating less wealth and less overall income than their parents. And so that is projected to continue with their children. So there's an economic pressure that I think fuels a lot of the anxiety of parenting and the anxiety that goes around things like competitive college admissions and kids feeling this pressure to stack their resume through high school, and even kids in elementary school doing foreign language lessons and music lessons and three different sports. It's this idea that not only do we have to raise good and caring and compassionate kids, we also have to raise these kids who are equipped to be at the top of their cohort and who are equipped definitely get into a great college and get a great job and basically be able to compete in an increasingly shrinking marketplace that they're inheriting. So I think that's an added economic pressure that parents are feeling these days.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I also got to believe that because of that pressure, not only from the parent, but obviously from, you know, siblings and friends, schoolmates, kids that they hang around with, and just, you know, just the public at large. It's just, as you said, it's just something that society seems to have adopted. Do you sense, or from your research, do you find that more kids, I hate to use the word bail out because it's sort of a cliche, but do most kids who have to be straddled with that kind of pressure, do they tend to feel less self-confident and never seem to achieve what they had hoped that they would because of this undue pressure?
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things that I found in my research was that there are definitely clear trends that depression and anxiety are rising in our children. And this is even before the pandemic. So obviously adding the pressures of the pandemic have added a huge degree of stress for today's kids. But even before the pandemic, there's clear literature showing that rates of depression and anxiety are increasing amongst our children. And what I think is so interesting is that this is a little bit of an oversimplification, but the data is pretty consistent that the less independent a child feels, the more likely they are to to have depression and anxiety, which seems a little bit counterintuitive, right? This idea that if they feel like their parents are really heavily invested in them and sort of standing right alongside them and doing everything with them, that sort of security you think might ward off depression and anxiety, but it turns out to be the exact opposite. The less independent a child feels, the more likely they are to get depressed and anxious. And conversely, the more freedoms children are given, they tend to have lower rates of depression and anxiety.
Yeah, that's interesting because I have found in my own personal experience, I'm sure you have too, and I think you're right. You lay down the law. You're not willing to give an inch. You believe that you're right as a parent, whether it's the mother or the father. And the child believes deep inside that, hey, look, you know, I mean, I'm not stupid. I'm, you know, I've proven myself up to this point. And then you have this friction between the parent and the child. And I'm sure that that creates a wedge just as much. But in addition, because you talk about this in your book, when women were wanting to, the women's movement to get back into the workforce, and, you know, many companies finally came around to saying, yeah, we're going to give you so much time for parental leave. Maybe it's a month, 2 months, whatever it may be. So you can work, you can, you know, still raise a child. You know, we'll give you some, we'll give you the benefits, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So in other words, this banner that has hung over society, especially mothers, that you can have it all, that's really not true, is it?
No, I don't think it's true. And I think it's a specific pressure on mothers or those who take the mothering role that fathers don't feel in the same way. You know, my wife has a great line, which is that mothers think about parenting all the time and fathers think about it only when they have to. And I think that's a really, you know, sort of really spot on. And in the book, I do talk about this, another writer, Ada Calhoun, calls the having it all virus that today's mothers were infected with as children, because their mothers basically were the first to have this sort of freedom to go back into the workplace. And what they sort of, the message that was given to their daughters is, you have this unique opportunity now that you are expected to work, but at the same time, you also will continue to be the great mother that you're meant to be. And that's almost an impossible task. And what's so fascinating is that today's moms who work actually spend the exact same amount of time with their children as the prior generation stay-at-home moms. So a stay-at-home mom from the 70s and a working mom from 2022 are basically spending the same amount of time with their kids, which is sort of flabbergasting when you think about it. And I do think there's a little bit of a movement now to sort of view mothering as a group effort to try to take some of that pressure off of the woman herself or the mother figure herself. And I think that's a really important movement, whether that be that a partner takes on more of the role, or there's ancillary caregivers who are appropriately compensated and appropriately treated, bringing back some of the older generation.
I think we lost you. Still there, Andrew? Andrew, I think we lost you. Andrew Bomback, you still there?
I'm still here. Sorry about that. I was just saying, I think we're clearly reaching a point, and perhaps the pandemic has brought this out, this idea that the role of a parent and asking one parent to do it all and to have it all is really an impossible task. And there's some new books that have come out recently that view mothering as sort of a community effort to sort of relieve some of the pressure from a single person. And I think that's a really interesting idea to say, well, mothering doesn't just have to fall on the mother. It can actually be something that's done by the mother, the father, the grandparents, the babysitter, employed caregivers, the community at large. And it's to me that sort of approach is really interesting. And then, you know, the government may also have a role in this. So, you know, we remember that during the pandemic, there were payments made to parents to help with childcare. And there was this phrase, which was childcare is a form of infrastructure. And to me, that's a really interesting way to view it, because it is. It is what keeps our society going, having appropriate child care.
Oh, no question about it. The next generation, I've heard that since I was a kid. You know, you're the next generation. You'll be the next generation to, you know, move this country forward and, you know, so on and so forth. And, I mean, it really wasn't a lot of hype. It's actually true. I mean, who's going to carry on, especially as, you know, older people pass on or they just retire from the workforce and, as you said, can't keep up with the things that they did when they were 30, 40 years younger. Another thing I wanted to bring up, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I wanted to, because I thought it was very interesting. I'm looking at the title, Long Days, Calm or Short Years. And I thought about that for a few moments and I said, wow. I mean, if you think about it and you read that and you let it sink in, it actually is so true. Yeah, each and every day, especially if you're frustrated, the child is frustrated with you, you're going through that, you know, the challenges of, no, you can't do that, but why can't I? And that makes for, it's like, when is this day going to come to an end? I think we've all said that. But at the end of the day, or at least as they get older, you start to look back and say, where did the time go? Where did those years? All of a sudden, he or she's 21, 22, leaving home, getting married, going off to college, taking on a job. Is that what was running through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I love the phrase. What's funny is that I thought this was like a phrase that had been around for hundreds of years, and it turns out it was actually put into a book only about 10 years ago. But I thought it was this age-old maxim, the days are long and the years are short. But the idea, I do think, has been around forever, this idea that you should appreciate what you have, even if it seems so painful and hard and exhausting, because before you know it, it will be over.
Right.
But I think that's also such a modern phenomenon that we acknowledge how hard it is. So, you know, this idea that we can actually say out loud how exhausting and how anxiety-provoking and how pressure-filled parenting is, to me, is a modern phenomenon. And so, you know, this days are long, years are short. There's so many different ways you can interpret it. You could say, you know what, I need to really focus on appreciating the time I have with my kids because before I know it, it will be over. The other way you can look at it is say, this is really hard, but at some point soon it will be over and I'll be able to get back to enjoying, you know, some freedom. So I think there's a lot of ways to interpret it, which is why I was so happy that, you know, my editor and I came to this as the title for the book, because it allows for multiple interpretations, which is really, you know, appropriate for a parenting book, because everybody has a different version of how they think parenting should be done.
Right.
And I think it sort of allows the reader to sort of give their own interpretation.
I thought the title was extremely apropos, Long Days, Short, you know, Short Years. And I think you'd agree, as we wrap up, that at the end of the day, and I'm sure you felt this way because I know I do each and every day, I give thanks for the blessing of having a child in my life. And yeah, you look back and you say, oh, I should have did it this way, or maybe I should have approached that issue a little bit more. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you do look back, you if you don't say to yourself, this has been one of the most challenging but yet one of the most rewarding experiences any human being can go through, then something's remiss. But, you know, that's each person feels differently about that, I guess. In summing it all up, though, Andrew, between the book and, you know, as you each day is a new challenge, but I think you gain something. Have you found it a little bit easier?
Well, it has become a little bit easier, in part just because my kids have gotten older. You know, this book took about 5 years to write. Mm-hmm. So I think the challenge of parenting becomes a little bit easier, a little bit more manageable, just because kids get older and a little bit more rational and
we hope.
And compliant. Yeah, and adherent to compliant. But no, but to be really, you know, frank, just exploring the subject matter, reading as many parenting books as I could, reading the history of parenting. In many ways, it's very reassuring just because you see that so many other parents are struggling with the same issues. You know, I read a sleep book for my youngest over the summer because we were having so much problems with him. And, it's like a 300-page book, but probably the message that I got the most was from the first chapter, which was, don't think you're alone. Everybody has problems with sleep. It's like,
right.
It's the rare exception to have a child who doesn't have problems with sleeping. So I think just knowing that others are dealing with the same struggles can be really reassuring for parents. And I think one of the sort of good evolutions of parenting One of the good changes is that modern parents are being encouraged to be more open about their struggles, more open about the anxieties and pressures. It's not taboo. It's not anything to be embarrassed about, to say, this is really hard. I'm having a lot of struggle with this, and I need some help. And I think that sort of openness should hopefully fuel some resources and some help for today's parents. And I hope that my book, which is not an advice book, it, you know, if anybody opens this book thinking they're going to get the advice on how to be the best parent, that's not what this book is about. This book is more an exploration of what parenting has become. In the book, I say it's not a how-to book, but a how-come book. How come parenting can be so hard? How come parenting has changed so much? But I hope that that readers will find something in the book that sort of resonates and says, yeah, I've thought these same questions. I've wondered these same things about parenting. And I think just knowing that there's other people out there thinking the same way can be reassuring.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I think that was the most unique part of the book, is that it isn't a step one, step two kind of plan. It's just one, personal emotions that were put into the book because you've been experiencing many of the things that many parents currently go through on a day-to-day basis. So yeah, it's almost a kind of a comfort book. You got to keep it by your bedside because you can pick up chapter two and what was Andrew going through at that time? Oh God, thank God, the same thing as I'm going through. So it really is reassuring. You're absolutely right. In the final few moments that we have before we close out, if people want to pose any questions or get more information, do some research about your background, I know the book is widely available. Is there a website or a way they can reach out to you?
They can find me on Twitter or Instagram, and they can message me that way. The book will be out in August and should be available at all your local bookstores or any of the online places where you buy books.
So anybody feeling the extreme frustrations of rearing children, just hang in there a few more weeks and the book will be widely available. Again, it's Long Days, Short Years, A Cultural History of Modern Parenting. And my guest has been physician and father and now writer, Andrew Bomback. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.